Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, my dear friends, fans, and colleagues, no matter where you are and when you're listening. Welcome back to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and I hope your Women's History Month has started out real swell. Stand up, ladies, loud and proud, and share what you have learned to teach our sisters and brothers. And today, we are going to have a great guest that's going to be doing just that on the show, because she's been at this for a number of years. Our guest today is Dale Allen, and our topic is In Our Right Minds, Guiding Women to Their Strength. And Dale, I need to tell you a bit about her in just a minute here, but first a shout out to Celia for her music, and that was her meta prayer. Also to Pat, my roving reporter, who sends in great stories for me to share, and to Abigail Spinner McBride, the lady whose music I'm going to be sharing to close the show. Takes all of us here to make Voices of the Sacred Feminine, spin and dance and weave, and we thank you. Thank you so much for your listener loyalty. Dale Allen, we've been trying to get her here on the show for multiple times. This is the third time, actually, and the third time is the charm. We will talk about that a bit, no doubt, when Dale is actually here with me and we're chatting, but I want to tell you a little bit more about her. She is a veteran of corporate and commercial communications, and her extensive resume includes hundreds of voiceover, on-camera, theater, and live presentation projects. She's an accomplished presenter and workshop facilitator. She was honored to present to scores of audiences, including the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women and the Parliament of the World's Religions. And she's got a one-woman show out there that's been circulating around, and it's called In Our Right Minds, Guiding Women to Their Strength as Leaders, Leading Men to Strength Without Armor. And her film version of the piece has been awarded in 19 film festivals worldwide. She's also a best-selling author, and the title of her book is Womb to Thrive, and her work has been published in several other books, and she co-authored Womb to Thrive, and her own book is In Our Right Minds, and that's going to be coming out this year. So before we start our chat, she has a surprise for us. So Dale, I'm going to, give the floor to you. I think you want to celebrate this woman, right?
Yes. Thank you so very much, Karen, and also for that lovely introduction and for the beautiful piece of music that you played, which filled my spirit. It was a great way to start the show. It is a great way to start the show. I spoke with Karen, I connected with her shortly before going live here to say that I wanted to share a piece that was a part of my original music theater production on the Sacred Feminine, where this whole journey started for me a quarter of a century ago. The name of the piece is We Celebrate This Woman, and I'll set the stage for you a bit. A cast of seven women, ages, different ages, shapes, sizes, and colors, come into the theater, and they take the form of a semicircle, which was a repeating theme in this musical theater production. The semicircle included the audience in an energetic full circle. And throughout the play, we see the way the Sacred Feminine weaves from ancient times and energies through these contemporary women. So in this particular scene, the drummers that were on stage at all time began playing an amazing, irresistible beat. And one woman at a time took her place in the center of the circle. And she danced While the other women called out in unison, "We celebrate this woman." And then each woman took her turn to sing praises. So one voice at a time would sing each of these passages. So here we go. "We celebrate this woman. See her beauty. See it radiate from within. She is the image and likeness of the goddess. As the rivers and streams, the lakes and oceans are Mother Earth's sacred blood, so is this woman's blood sacred. The stream of life runs through her. The blood of life runs through her. Her sacred blood follows the cycles of nature, for she is one with Mother Earth. We celebrate this woman. See her hands that work and create, that caress and comfort. See her arms that gather and hold, protect and enfold. See the strength with which she protects her boundaries. We celebrate this woman. The nurturing love of the goddess flows through her. Whether it is the milk that grows a child or the love and care that flows in energy from her heart to the world, the healing love of the great mother flows through her. She is holy. She is whole. We celebrate this woman. Her womb is the womb of creation. All that is good is birthed through her. Her soul's gifts are gestated in her womb and are born with love into the world. Carrier of life, carrier of love, carrier of all creation, she is sacred. We celebrate this woman. See her legs that dance her sacred and joyful dances. From her hips to her feet, she is grounded deep into Mother Earth. See her legs and the strength with which she stands in the glory of her divine heritage. We celebrate this woman. Blessed is her roundness. Blessed is her fullness. Blessed is her softness. Blessed is her body. The sacred fire of the goddess glows in her belly. Every curve of her body is grace. We celebrate this woman. We honor her courage. We honor her strength. See how to herself she is true. See how she acts from her inner knowing. See how she refuses what is not right for her. See how she opens all her energy to that which honors and sustains her. We celebrate this woman. We honor her wisdom. We honor and celebrate her journey and the life experience that makes a spiritual elder, a wise woman, a crone, a keeper of the flame. For she is a holy one. She is a daughter of the goddess. She and all her sisters are a divine lineage. Oh, blessed one, we celebrate you. And the drums came forth in a resounding drum call. And the play moved along.
Lovely. That was really lovely. And thank you for that opening. What a great way to start the show, especially with Women's History Month. You know, given rise to the sacred feminine, and it certainly seems like she is rising as never before, you know, out there in the world. I mean, I've been at this a long time, Dale, and so have you. Is it just me, or does it seem like she is rising out there exponentially?
Well, I think that the big factor that's been at play, because for me it's been a quarter century in this message. And one of the great things that's working in favor of the sharing of the sacred feminine is the way the world has changed because of the internet. Because, I mean, when I was first doing this, I was literally sending out, you know, packets to universities via snail mail to book my one-woman show. And I think that it's been very helpful. I remember when the World Wide Web, I sound ancient, which I completely love, I remember when the World Wide Web was taking hold, and I thought, wow, you know, there's World War I, World War II, and then there's WWW, World Wide Web, and it felt so feminine. And I thought, this is going to be a wonderful way for women to connect and to share. So indeed, I am with you and agree that there is an exponential growth right now in the movement forward of this energy, and in my lens, the activation of this archetype. I agree with you, Karen.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and we go back to about the same time. I remember when I was, you know, doing this in Los Angeles, I saw your, you know, your one-woman play, you know, was out there. And shoot, the not-for-profit that I started, the Isis Ancient Culture Society, we would have newsletter mailing parties and have to put all the newsletters, you know, arranged according to zip code to go mail them at the post office, bulk mail. I mean, you know, that's how long ago, you know, we were at this and dreaming of a rise of the sacred feminine. I know we were thinking about temples, goddess temples in every neighborhood, and you know, now we see, you know, the Divine Feminine app, and I mean, she's just proliferating all over, and it's gratifying. You know, it feels like all of those seeds we planted so long ago, along with so many other women, you know, back in those decades past, you know, have really, you know, sprouted and bore fruit.
Yes, yes. I completely agree. And it makes me very happy to see this. And one of the things as I think about this faster movement of energy and this faster movement of information, I also like to call to our attention that it's important to kind of pause in spaces and places and go deep, and go deep into an understanding of lost history, both the lost history of the sacred feminine, you know, to do some exploration, because I know that as this movement happens quickly, there's also sometimes things go down very simply into a, you know, a couple of words and a quick post and fast moving things. And that has energy and it carries this message forward. It is also important to have a deeper understanding as well, only because that deeper understanding makes the entire thing that much more powerful and more deep tissue in all of us.
No, I agree. I mean, I have felt like, you know, a lot of times I'll see goddess-oriented stuff out there, and it feels diluted. And, you know, when I've had these conversations with myself, okay, you know, it's diluted, but at least it's out there. What would you rather have it not be out there, you know, than be diluted? And, but, you know, I'm still doing it the way I've always done it, you know, teaching about, Rhiannon Eisler's Chalice and the Blade, you know, and all that foundational stuff, you know, so that women know the history. You know, when I go out and talk about the sacred feminine, you know, I usually go armed with Constant Tippett's goddess timeline. And I mean, women are just amazed to, you know, see that women, you know, that women and men were worshiping the sacred feminine at least 45,000 years ago, you know, maybe 200,000 years ago. And that shouldn't get lost, you know, that shouldn't get lost in the process of growing her out there, I don't think. I mean, that it would be a real shame.
Right. It feels to me that it's just both. It's both. It's fine to have the proliferation and the fast-moving, you know, posts. It's fine because that goes far and wide, reaches quickly. And then it's just to have the substance beneath it, and a way for people to find the substance. So I think it's all happening, Karen. I think it's all good and it's all happening. Because,
yeah.
And I know for me,
yeah.
You know, I have my book, which is you know, comes out this month, and I'm so thrilled about it. But I know that the most important value of my work over the past quarter century has been, I love the scholarship. I love reading the ginormous books. I love taking the heavy work of the anthropologists and the cultural historians and the psychologists, and I love going through all that. But that's not going to be everybody's way. So I can take all that and I can synthesize it in a way that people can take in the message and really comprehend it in short order. It's a very sweeping journey in short order, always has been, whether it was from the musical to the one-woman show to the film and now the book. It's a way to take a sweeping journey in this shorter, comprehensive pathway that it's all there, but it's distilled down a tremendous amount of scholarship into a story that one can, you know, take away with them. I also feel that the value of it is when someone, maybe even like you and us, or people who have been involved with, say, the sacred feminine energy for a period of time, or even new at it, and they want to, somebody asks them, well, why? What? Why is this important to you? Or, you know, why this goddess thing? What is it about? This is a great way to say, this is why I'm interested in the sacred feminine. It's a great way to kind of explain and give substance and give background and give, you know, again, lost history and why this goddess archetype is relevant and important today and why restoring it is necessary for a thriving future.
Yeah, because, I totally get what you're saying, that, you know, everybody isn't going to take a deep dive into the anthropology and the archaeology and the linguistics and all of that sort of stuff that comprises the herstory. But it's so good that we do have it there to point to, because then, you know, no one that opposes it can just say it's some, you know, female power grab or, you know, feminist fantasy or something along those lines, you know. But Dale, you know, I don't think you and I have ever talked about your beginnings. How did your journey to the sacred feminine actually begin?
I look at it now and I think, wow, what an amazing way the soul works in life, or just that sort of higher level of consciousness within any of us. I was at a crossroads in my life. I was at a turning point. I've always been a very spiritual person from the beginning, from my very earliest memories, you know, someone that saw things and that other people didn't see, and it was clear to me that they didn't, just from more of the unseen realm, and that seemed fine and natural to me. And my sense of spirituality was always very fluid and very all-encompassing and all around and in nature and in everyone. And I was raised Catholic, with a progressive mother, by the way, with a very open-minded mom. So my Catholic experience was kind of wonderful and kind of magic and a good experience. It also laid down deep tracks because all the pronouns are male, 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 male. So anyway, I had my very open spirituality, and my sense of, you know, God was a sense of, and still is, you know, God, goddess, the creator, the energy behind all things is becoming and complete at the same time, manifest and unmanifest at the same time, and certainly beyond gender, and infuses the genders. So I didn't feel the need to have a feminine pronoun for the divine. I really didn't. And it was at this crossroads in my life where the way that I had been going after certain goals, and my career goals, by the way, are always synonymous with my sense of soul and purpose. It's never been two slices of the pie. It's always the same. So I was in this crossroads where this path I was on was clearly becoming not the path to be on. And that was painful because a lot had gone into my efforting to get along a certain pathway. But I decided to stay in this void for a while. So things had kind of come crashing down and I was in a void. And I'm glad that for some reason I had the wisdom, I gleaned that it was best to pull my energy in tight, don't immediately retrack into another pathway that you put all your gusto into. That was essentially the message. Stop, pause, 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 wait, stop, stop. Pull your energy in and just be. Well, for somebody who likes to go and go and go, this was different. But I did do it. I said, all right, I will just be. And so I pulled my energy in real close and was kind of just in my life in this pause, which our culture doesn't generally celebrate. Like, what do you mean you're on pause? Well, what good is that going to do? However, I stayed. And in that pause, I started to come across the word goddess. But more importantly, I started to hear inside of myself a different kind of wisdom. I mean, I've always been in tune and in touch and in tune and in touch, but this voice was coming from within, and it was female, totally female. And I thought, well, now that's interesting. And I started seeing the word goddess in many different places. And I can thank the former scholars who came before me, because it was their books I was coming across, essentially, in odd bookstores. And I didn't like the word, Karen. I really didn't. And it was because I didn't like the word. I thought, well, why do we need this word? We don't need this goddess word. That's when I started to really go fully into exploring the goddess. And because of my nature, that's when I started to study, and I got out all of the work of the anthropologists and the cultural historians and the poets and the fiction writers and the, you know, just all of the books and these scholars that I am forever grateful to, who are all listed in my bibliography, by the way, and I encourage people to do their own studying if they're called to it. But that was what got me onto the message, and because it was so profoundly transformative for me, and I started taking, for example, the Catholic prayers I was raised with, and I changed them, and I said, Our Mother, who art within us, each breath brings us to you. And I rewrote the whole prayer. And I was really having such a transformative experience with it that I realized I wanted to share it. Like, I couldn't not share it. Because when you have an experience something so healing, there's a great desire to share it. And that's what made me write the musical theater production, because of my love of the arts. And then I made this play about the goddess with original songs and dances, comedic sketches in it, really profound, deeply moving stuff in it, and, you know, content in it. That play, once it was put out, I realized how much people needed this message, because the audience response, whether it was old men or young girls and everybody in between, they really responded to it and said, oh, my gosh, we need this. And then that just opened up a whole path, you know, turned it into a one-woman show. Around, turned it into a film.
Well, and certainly a lot of doors open to you as well. And really that's a credit to you, because I think most people might not realize, and I don't know, maybe even you yourself might not realize that, you know, it's like the word patriarchy, right? People would kind of roll their eyes. I mean, you know, I recall trying to get a goddess series on TV, and the resistance to that. Emmanuel Etier, who did Femme, Women Healing the World, the resistance he got, you know, from men and a lot of women alike. You know, the waters kind of parted for you with this, you know, In Our Right Minds. You know, was the struggle harder than it looked from the outside looking in, or did the waters just seem to part for you, Dale?
I will tell you that I worked hard, I made things happen through a lot of effort and work, and also I very, very carefully crafted my message to be one that could be heard at universities, in synagogues, at churches, in theaters, at expos, in corporations. Mm-hmm. In women's groups and corporations, I very, very carefully crafted my message. A lot of work went into that. And the way that I presented it was one that by standing in a position where I presented the work of scholars, I was not presenting a religion and I wasn't presenting a type of dogma. I was saying, let's look at this together. And the way that it was done was so carefully, carefully crafted that audiences were receptive because of all the work, the back work that went into making the message one that would be able to flow forward without pressing buttons and hitting a gazillion triggers.
Right, right. Well, and please, let's not assume everyone understands the double meaning in the title, too, In Our Right Minds. Why don't you elaborate on that a little bit?
Oh, thank you so much. I would love to. The reason I call my work In Our Right Minds is because I absolutely draw the parallels. I look at what how our asymmetrical bilateral human brains work. I look at how were we designed as human beings. So our history on this planet, more than 90% of it is hunter-gatherer history. I mean, think about that. We don't consider it. We don't even talk about it. We pretty much, we just say, oh, yeah, the hunter-gatherer period. And it's really what is the basis for who and what we are as animals, as creatures, as humans. And our brains are designed similarly to all other neural networks, other, you know, creatures like us. It's an asymmetrical bilateral human brain. So in looking at, if we were to look at the origins of patriarchy, which is almost a drop in the bucket in terms of our full history, and yet we live so deep, very hard to imagine that the initial reality looks a whole lot different than the reality that we're in now, and that we're designed to be in balance of the left and right hemispheres of the brain. We're designed to be in a balance of the masculine and feminine energies, and that all of us, humans, men and women, have masculine and feminine energy. Our blueprint has the male, the masculine, essentially being the hunter-killer role, the female being the gatherer-nurturer role. In indigenous cultures, we see the occasional human that sort of will be in, do the role of the other gender. So nothing, you know, not a lot of, there's not restrictions or dogma about that. This is just the way we evolve. And the brain also evolves with very specific roles. So while both sides of our brains are working at the same time for all tasks, both sides are working. It's the way that we attend to the world that will define it for us. It will change the way we perceive it, and ultimately it will change the world that we create. So the left hemisphere is the hemisphere that's going to focus and think about what it takes for a hunter-killer to focus on finding prey, targeting it in a huge scene, focusing on that moving target, and then getting it and bringing back this necessary food source, particularly for women who need iron while they're menstruating. I mean, it's a perfect and beautiful design. Then you have the gatherer-nurturers who are operating more using the right hemispheric skills, because that's going to take in the gestalt. It's going to take in the full picture. It's going to be able to take in a lot of things at the same time, gathering the berries and so forth. Now, both hemispheres are at work, again, for both tasks, for all tasks at all times. So I'm just going to give you a little example of how this works. But rather than a human, we'll use a bird. And I quote the work of Ian McGilchrist because he's just phenomenal in terms of the latest brain research. And his name is also in my bibliography. But take a bird that flies down, and it's searching for a worm. So that's a very left brain activity. It's focusing, where's the worm in this big picture? I've got to get that worm for my lunch. Meanwhile, the right hemisphere of the brain is aware of everything that's going on around that bird. So that if a hawk is going to come down and swoop to get the bird for its lunch, the little bird is going to notice because the right hemisphere is also working. Right hemisphere is big picture, gestalt. The ultimate wisdom is in the right hemisphere. The right hemisphere is very connected to the other. It's empathetic. It's embodied. And it's that, quote, feminine gatherer-nurturer side. And it really is the carrier of the ultimate wisdom. The way our brains are designed to work is new information comes in, the right hemisphere is very open to it, open to the present moment, now, present moment. Then as this information comes in, we send it over to the left hemisphere where the filing system is that we started building when we were tiny, tiny, tiny creatures, tiny humans. That filing system says, well, I've seen this before. This goes into this file. That goes into that file. This goes into this file. That goes into that file. The left hemisphere doesn't like things that are new. It files it where it belongs with something similar. But then ultimately, the way humans are designed to work is rather than stay in the filing system, if you will, where everything is kind of abstract and filed, come back to the wisdom, the embodied wisdom, the very present gestalt view of the right hemisphere. That's being in our right minds. That's being in balance of the masculine and feminine as we are designed to be. And always coming back to relation to the other, relation to the world around us, relation to nature, to our own bodies and the interconnectedness of all things. In our right minds, metaphorically, my title means we are reverting back to the right hemisphere of the brain, that wisdom, which is also connected to the feminine, the honoring, the sacredness of the feminine, like our indigenous brothers and sisters still do. They still display this and operate this way, and connecting us back to all of our foremothers and forefathers in the model that we were all created with as humans, going back to our full history before patriarchy.
Well, that was the long answer. but how thorough there. Thank you, Dale. We've just kind of referred to the right hemisphere of the brain as sort of the goddess part of the brain that we've forgotten. I think that book that came out, The Alphabet and the Goddess, the premise was when we started to have writing and language, we started using less of our the right hemisphere of the brain, and we started focusing more on the left and, to get things done. But we know that we need both in order to be, in order to be whole. And, unfortunately, so many of those attributes of the right hemisphere of the brain, had been marginalized maybe. And, we didn't really think so much about them being as important to survive out there in the world, I think, as the left hemisphere. But we have to see through both of our eyes to see the whole picture.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up Leonard Schlain in The Alphabet versus the Goddess. I absolutely quote him in my work, and I owe him a debt of gratitude. Phenomenal, phenomenal piece that he wrote. And you are correct. We look through both of our eyes, those right hemispheric attributes of, empathy, connection to the other, working out, differences with sense of, exploring one another and finding a way. And, we started to consider those things to be idealized, like, not really attainable, just kind of an ideal. Not true. Not true. It's an aspect of the of who we actually are. We are designed to have these qualities.
Yeah. Well, and that's how we have our spiritual experiences. That's how we, employ our intuition, all of those things. But let's switch over to a different topic, all along the same parallel track. But I wanted to hear about Dancers of the Dawn. It seems like that was the precursor to your one-woman show, In Our Right Minds, which is now also the title of your new book coming out in a couple weeks.
Yes, it was. That was the first thing that I did. My first creative offering when I wanted to share the sacred feminine was to write Dancers of the Dawn with that cast of seven women, different ages, shapes, sizes, and colors. And this was in Westport, Connecticut, which is a beautiful, beautiful town and an artist's community and beautiful theater here. And I put this play on, and the funny thing, Karen, we had the cast, we learned all the songs, all the original musical numbers that I wrote. We had all the comedic sketches down. We had this powerful, powerful piece that was so moving that we would cry in rehearsals because it was so powerful. And when it came time for the show to start, and I had all the posters were out and all the notices were up and the sponsor had, a lot of money for me to be able to put this thing on, wow, was I terrified just before it opened. I thought, what am I doing? I am putting on this play about the goddess in Westport, Connecticut. What a mistake this is. I'm going to be like the goddess lady. This is going to be terrible. People are just going to, it's going to be awful. And there's a lot of fear. And but it's too late. The cast was already ready to go. The costumes were sewn. It was all ready to go. And the play did open. And that's when I saw the response, the response to it. And so many people who personally reached out to me to say that it had been such a healing experience for them. So that was Dancers of the Dawn with the drummers on stage at all times. And it was quite an experience. And then I was going to keep the show going for another, kind of season. But I discovered that I had my daughter was on the way. And I decided to turn it into a one-woman show, which would be far more manageable than keeping a theater going and a cast going and in and out of New York City and so forth. And that one-woman show informed a huge part of my life as well. And I was able to get on airplanes with my bag full of props and my rain stick and go to universities, conferences, expos, theaters, corporations, churches, synagogues, all kinds of events, doing this one-woman show. Yeah, so it's a progression. And then that became the film. Book. Yeah.
Wow. You know, well, and I am curious, what were you doing before you started hearing that voice of the sacred feminine? You know, what was the focus of your work before it went into the, I guess let's call it the goddess arena?
You know, thanks for asking that, because it's actually very cool for me to kind of step back and take a right brain view of that. Because when I think of it, you know, my background, I have a lot of corporate, commercial, and creative communication. So commercials, voiceovers, you know, presenting, delivering messages, hosting infomercials, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm a speaker. I'm a presenter. When I was in school, I was in theater, and I was also president of the student council, that kind of thing, out in front, right? And so I was also doing psychic readings because I see things. So I was doing readings for people. So I had my outward work, and I had all of my readings that I was doing and psychic fairs and that sort of thing. I had two agents. I had an agent in New York. I had an agent in Manhattan. I was doing stand-up comedy. And I was doing all these things. And I happened to be out in California, and a lot of work had gone into me going out to California for a pilot season. And that was where this shift happened. And I realized that the way that I was going forward with this pathway, this kind of like, you know, performance pathway, needed to shift. And that's where that void happened, that gap happened. And that was where it was almost like the puzzle pieces all sort of were put together for me. In other words, I had this deeply, deeply transformative experience of hearing the voice of our foremothers saying that feminine is sacred, and hearing that and hearing her and knowing I had to share this, and therefore plugging in all of my skills and abilities in theater, presenting, writing, sharing, taking a message and making it something that people will be able to understand, but putting that in service of the sacred feminine. And then all of the intuitive stuff that came through in the readings, that also comes through all of the work, because it's just as much a part of it. So it all orchestrated.
Wow, what an incredible story. Well, we're almost 40 minutes in, Dale, and I need to take a break and do a commercial here. But when we get back, I want to hear about the Parliament, and I also want to hear about, you know, if your message has changed any since you started those decades ago. You know, has our collective future, I guess, changed in your view from when this all began? But first, we're going to have a word here from Joe Carson.
Hello, let me say a few things about Joe Carson's film, Dancing with Gaia, an exploration of Earth-based spirituality shot at sacred sites around the world. Here is Drusilla Pettibone on DearMist.com. I was truly touched and even awed by the film. I really appreciate that there is so much substantive information to digest. For example, the info about henges and tracing the horizon line is all new to me and totally fascinating. The film was very beautiful, and I was amazed how it was able to capture so many of the descriptions visually and seamlessly connect vintage footage with modern. I especially loved when images were dynamically superimposed on each other, like the lace with the water and the dancing in the flowering meadow. A visual feast and with so many layers. I am also pleased to have been introduced to Monica Shu and her work. It's so important for pagans to become aware of our heritage. It seems easily lost among so many new books, and the film really brought me home in a new way. Dancing with Gaia is available at dancingwithgaia.com.
Well, would you like to hear from one of your past loved ones, from a credible, authentic, evidential medium? How about an Akashic Records reading to learn about your purpose or past lives, or a one-on-one session with an awakening life coach? I can attest from personal experience, Melody Rosecrans at Invoke and Ra is absolutely amazing, a living embodiment of wisdom and a catalyst to remove blocked, stagnant energy. She will ignite your awakening. Melody has received several incredible reviews. One client reported, Melody is amazing. Her classes are informative, genuine, a real eye and heart opener to true spirituality. As for one-on-one sessions, I highly recommend them. Each one is a new experience on your journey. You will be comfortable and well cared for with Melody. Another said, what a great reading. Melody was able to connect with my mom and gave me specifics to put any doubt I had at ease. What a great feeling knowing my mom approves of my recent decisions and she's watching over me. I can't wait to have another reading to see who else she connects with. Well, if this resonates with you, you can get in touch with Melody and make an appointment in person or via Zoom. Go to her website, Invoke and Ra. That's InvokeAndRa.com. Or give her a call at 541-291-1240, and you can schedule your appointment with her today. And one more word from Joe Carson before we go.
This is from Jonathan Nightshade, a Gardnerian high priest of the Whitecroft line, a traditional craft practitioner and researcher, writing about Joe Carson's book, Celebrate Wildness, Magic, Mirth, and Love on the Farafaria Path. I love this book, how special this work is and how appreciated. As someone who was young in the 1970s and through the years only found snippets of information on Farafaria, one of the first modern pagan paths, this book comes as an artistic revelation of the core practices of the way of the goddess and gods reborn for the next age of the divine maiden. She has clearly introduced the historical background, philosophy, and ritual practices of the joyous wilderness mysteries of the fairy faith, illuminated by the marvelous pagan art of Farafaria's founder, Fred Adams. I was very pleased that the high-quality production of this oversized volume makes it a collectible work of art, as well as a testament to the visionary philosophy of Fred Adams. I feel blessed that I received a copy. I will treasure it and look forward to the next book for more of the deep philosophy and ritual practice of Farafaria.
Celebrate Wildness is a dense art book quality hardcover book. You can get it for just $45 from the Farafaria website at farafaria.org. That's Farafaria.org.
Well, if you're tuning in late, my guest today is Dale Allen, and our topic is In Our Right Minds, Guiding Women to Their Strength. And Dale, for several decades now, she shared the healing energy of the sacred feminine through her work, In Our Right Minds, on the sacred feminine, the right brain, and restoring humanity's natural balance, which has been widely acclaimed at universities, conferences, corporations, theaters, and expos across the U.S., Canada, from Kauai to Dubai, the U.N. Commission on the Status of Women, and the Parliament of the World Religions. The film version has been awarded in 19 independent film festivals worldwide, and Dale's book is coming out March 21st, and it is of the same title, In Our Right Minds. So, Dale, thank you for your patience there while I took care of some housekeeping bits. So let's talk a bit about the Parliament. We have about 12 minutes or so left, and I also want to get to how the message has changed. So I'll leave it to you. Where do you want to go first?
So I think I will discuss first how the message has changed, because we were just talking about In Our Right Minds, and then I'll pick up the Parliament. But with regard to the story of In Our Right Minds, when I was first presenting this work in my one-woman show and really getting into what was happening with the use of the human brain research, it was exciting to report that much like the history and scholarship that's presented via Leonard Schlain, via Daniel Pink in his book, A Whole New Mind. I did podcasts for Yale, for Professor Stephen Kellert, Dan Etze, also from Yale. We're talking about how people were starting to use more of those right brain skills, or attending to the world, I should say, from a right brain perspective. This was exciting, very, very exciting, because through the use of the iconographic revolution, photography, film, television, the internet, people were beginning to, again, come more from that right brain perspective, which is a beautiful increase in empathy, intuitive understanding, embodiment, upliftment of the feminine, all these good things. Now, we had something that happened, and I was working on my book at this time. We're going to go back 10 years to about 2014. That was when the smartphone started to enter our world, and it entered in a very, very big way. And the smartphone has become ubiquitous, and it's playing a very big role in terms of, once again, changing the way we attend to the world. So between not only our smartphones but also computers, we are becoming deeply immersed and distracted, really, by more of a virtual world, a world of processes, apps, fragmented silos of information, and we could say disinformation, social media avatars that replace real connection. Real connection with a real human being is very much in the present moment. It is very unique when we relate. There's that empathy that's happening. But we're starting to... Well, we've gotten, and we're continuing to get more lost in this left brain virtual world. The issue around that is that depression and anxiety have risen globally because of this and this decrease in empathy. I mean, the research is here. Social media, this more left brain approach, does have an impact on our mental health. And so one of the things that has changed in my message is to help to draw people to awareness of how our brains work and how it's really going to be important going forward that we as individuals, and also as anybody with any influence over children and young people, whether they're our own or, you know, in our neighborhood, or we all have some kind of influence there, to help and to teach the importance of out of the virtual world into the present world, in touch with the breath, in touch with the moment, in touch with real connection with others and with nature and with animals and with life. So that would be a shift in my message. My book goes into it in quite a bit of depth, but that's an important shift in terms of what's happening, because we are rapidly moving with our technology and we need to be very, very careful, or the virtual world we create will take us on a path that won't be good for us.
Yeah.
And then And then the other point is, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, well, no, that's okay. I was just thinking that was, you know, actually very astute. You know, I hadn't quite thought about it, you know, to that extent, but, you know, my ears are perking up, and I think you're right on with that. And as, you know, before I have to let you go, I want to hear about the parliament, because, I mean,
thank
it used to be that, you know, Goddess didn't have a place at the parliament. I mean, I remember when I interviewed... you know, Lady Olivia Robertson, you know, one of the founders of the Fellowship of Isis, she was telling me, I think in probably about 2015, maybe, that, you know, that's when her and I were having the discussion. She said it wasn't that long before that she actually got death threats at the parliament for coming forward with this idea of the sacred feminine. So things have changed a good bit, I believe, there.
Yes, without a doubt, and that's a very compelling story that you just told. The parliament has a noble beginning. It, you know, started 100 years ago or more by men, but to foster understanding between the religions. Well, that's noble. That's beautiful. What happened is that as time went on, It was a wonderful story that Phyllis Curott tells, and as well as some other women that were there. It was, I think it was in 2015 when the Parliament was opening, and up on stage, that's, you know, usually you have 60 people or so up there representing the world's religions, and there wasn't a woman, not one. And the call came from the back of the room, where are the women? Where are the women? This has caused a lot of change in the Parliament for the presence of women. And the debt of gratitude is also owed to Phyllis. She does practice Wicca. She's a Wiccan priestess. That is her pathway. And she has done a wonderful job not only bringing the sacred feminine into the Parliament, but the presence of women in general. The presence of women in general is more, you know, kind of where I'm coming from. I was part of a group that put together the first ever women's village at the Parliament. So here we were at the McCormick Center, which is, you know, it's a convention hall, but we made this womb at the convention hall. The women's village was this beautiful, nurturing, peaceful, luscious place to just, you know, relax. And there were wonderful offerings for, you know, women and the sacred feminine. I mean, it was gorgeous. It was also really important to me that if I were wearing a burqa, would I feel welcome? If I were, you know, Buddhist, would I be welcome? Jewish, Christian, you know, Hindu. I wanted to make sure that women, and so did others on the team, that all women were welcome in the women's village. It wasn't just about, you know, for example, those who practice Wicca. And that was achieved. I had an interview suite at the Parliament. And that was the womb within the womb. I mean, that was like this really sweet, sweet place where people could come and sit and talk about their faith in action. And here's the most beautiful part, Karen. No matter what faith a woman practiced, as she sat across from me in that interview suite, it was like looking in a mirror, because the women did not speak from dogma. They did not. They spoke from connection, empathy, care for the earth, care for the future generations, all the future generations, not just the children from their culture, community, or religion, everybody, all the earth thriving. I mean, that was the message from the women, and it was gorgeous, and I absolutely loved it. So, you know, I certainly honor everybody's individual faith path, because it connects you to your ancestors. Wow, is there power in that. I also am a big fan of all of the world's religions being infused with the lifeblood, the breath, and the presence, the bones of women, actually being women in that religion and bringing the feminine forth, which is therefore the sacred feminine, and that it really can and will infuse all religions by the presence of more and more women in religion in places of some kind of, you know, having a voice. We have a long way to go, for sure, and the world needs all of us. You know, dear listener, whoever you are, Karen's doing a great job bringing incredible content to you. You take this content in, you breathe it in, and let it just activate within your body for your gifts and what you're going to offer to this world. And offer to this world might be your neighborhood. It might also be the globe. It's all relative, and it's all important. It all matters. You count, you matter, and you are the sacred feminine in action.
Well, Dale, that sounded like your last word. I think as the producer, I'm going to say, well, that's a wrap. Why don't you tell listeners where they can find you and your work and your new book and all the rest?
Thank you very much. And dear listener, please do find me. Please come and see me at inourrightminds.net. InOurRightMinds.net, which is InOurRightMinds.net, InOurRightMinds.net. There you will see a way to watch the film. It's a 45-minute documentary. It's powerful. It is. And the book, information on how to get the book, which will launch distinctly on March 21st, and I hope to get lots of activity that day. I'd like to see the book go far and wide because of its healing. What it has for, you know, healing. And then there's also the Dale Allen podcast, which is on all podcast platforms. But I look forward to seeing you there at InOurRightMinds.net. Thank you.
Well, Dale, thank you so much. And I'm glad we persisted to get you here on the show. I mean, this was our third attempt, but, you know, as we were joking with each other, I think the third time was the charm. The first time the emergency broadcast system, you know, just filled the airwaves and it wasn't possible to even get on. What a weird thing that was. And then the second time, I don't know, there was something weird happening on your end, I think, right?
Yeah, there was. It was just, we were meant to be together right now. And this was the moment, because not only for you and I, but for whoever it is that's hearing this message, this is the right time for it. And I do trust that, very much so. And I thank you on the human level for your patience, Karen. And I'm grateful to both of us for persisting to make this happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm so glad to have met you, Dale, to have been on your show. And I'm just so glad that, you know, you're a sister in service out there teaching about the sacred feminine, and you've done it in such a profound, professional way with in our right minds. I mean, you know, you just took the message and put it out there on a different level that so many of us didn't have the ability to do. And, you know, I applaud you for that. And, you know, thank you for the sake of, you know, all of our futures. Thank you very much.
Okay. That has now made me speechless. Thank you, Karen. Thank you.
All right, then. I'm sure we'll be in touch, Dale. Thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, my heart. Thank you so much. Thank you all.
Bye-bye. Well, one last thing, listeners, before you go and I say goodbye, is I want to make sure you know about the renewal retreat that's happening in Sunny Valley, Oregon, starting May 31st. They have such incredible things planned. Please do go to the organizer, Kate Bostwick at gmail.com. That's CateBostwick at gmail.com. This renewal retreat, it's for women of all ages, races, walks of life. They're coming together around the sacred fire to share our stories, receive support, heal, grow, and our next best evolution. And they welcome you to this inclusive community, and they want to empower you to take time to invest in yourself. You know, it's going to be about releasing, revitalizing, and realizing your true potential. You'll get the opportunity to immerse yourself in the supportive embrace of Mother Nature as they engage in the art of letting go what no longer serves to create space for the lives we have always dreamed of. So if that piques your curiosity at all, and it should, you know, please do check it out. If you want to spend that long weekend in a beautiful environment doing great things for yourself, consider this. Consider this renewal retreat here in Sunny Valley, Oregon. And I am pleased to say that I am going to actually be one of the facilitators there for one of the main evening offerings, talking about herstory, women's agency, healing the feminine wound, and all of that good stuff to, you know, plant the seeds in the next generation of women, because, you know, we're going to have to be passing that baton. And, you know, we need women who, you know this like the back of their hand to carry the baton forward. And it's my pleasure to be a part of this wonderful renewal retreat. Okay. Well, that about does it for me today, listeners. And as always, I'm going to end on a homage to Sekhmet, lion-headed Egyptian goddess, who tells us all to stand up, be heard. Don't be afraid of your anger. Don't be afraid to set healthy boundaries, because you know what? If you don't set those boundaries, nobody will. So say no without guilt or shame. And here's Sekhmet.